Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I'm joined today by my buddy, Pat Corain, here to talk, all of the relevant fantasy football stuff going on in our world right now. Lots of ways to get down in fantasy football this year. We have Underdog is back. We have a best ball championship. We have drafters. We have the FFPC main event, of course, the Football Guys Players Championship, the FFWC. How's the main event draft going now after 10 rounds, I think you guys are through?
Yeah, we are actually done the main event draft, but I forget exactly. I need to release another mini episode, so I don't want to do any spoilers for that.
No spoilers.
But we, behind the scenes, have actually finished up our draft. We feel really good about it. But yeah, I think through 10 or 11 rounds in the minis. And we did kind of a modified zero running back start. We got Alvin Kamara in round one. Then we went and did a little bit of a reach for Mark Andrews in round two and then hammered wide receiver for four rounds. And then came back for my boy, Ronald Jones.
Ronald Jones, you won. You were not able to get him on the quad managed team, though.
That's right, yeah. And I actually had made a deal. So this is a team that we quad managed, me and Pete, with Blair Andrews and Hassan Raheem from RotoViz, and I made a deal prior to the draft starting that I was willing to go true zero running back if Blair would then slot in Ronald Jones for us as our first running back. So even with that deal made, still didn't secure Ronald Jones because someone who knew my articles, he's a established run subscriber and knew Ronald Jones wasn't coming back, took him at the 502. Which is the earliest he's gone in any FFPC draft to date this year. So that was pretty tilting. And you can actually see me tilt on that. If you check out my Twitter profile, it's on there.
So I want to start out by talking a little bit about Underdog, because the ADP for the draft best ball championship is for the Underdog best ball championship is very interesting. I did my first one yesterday, and what I found is that it seems like the running back ADP is going to be pretty efficient for zero running back drafting. So Kareem Hunt has an ADP of 88. He pretty much goes in the fifth round now in all the high stakes leagues, more or less.
Yep.
Cam Akers is 71. I know you have some mixed feelings about the Cam Akers, Daryl Henderson situation. J.K. Dobbins, this is the one to me that seems crazy. J.K. Dobbins has an ADP of 98, and Damian Williams has an ADP of 102. I would pretty much feel comfortable taking those guys, like having 100% exposure to those guys at those price points.
Yeah, that's like insane value on those guys. Even the Akers one, you're right. I'm not that into Akers, but in the FFPC, he's more of like a fourth, fifth round guy. So you're getting a discount on him. Those are pretty nice discounts.
Well, in the FFPC, in high stakes leagues this year, the market makers have spoken, right? All of the guys who are going to be grinding out, you know, hundreds of these high stakes drafts over the next couple months, they have spoken and they've said, this ain't it, right? This is not the year to be waiting on running back. These are guys who are ahead of the market on guys that you and I feel uncomfortable with, you know, guys like Nick Chubb, guys like Aaron Jones, guys like Todd Gurley, David Johnson, Melvin Gordon, like Josh Jacobs. My official prediction is Josh Jacobs is going to end up with a first round ADP by the time we get to August. Like, he's just going to go in the first round.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
Which, I would so much rather have Kenyon Drake or Miles Sanders than Josh Jacobs. Like, isn't it so much more likely that those guys catch 50 passes? Like, there really is not a timeline with the way the Raiders set up their team where they are going to throw them that many passes.
I agree. I mean, they've given some lip service to it, but then they re-signed Jalen Richard and drafted Bowden. So it's like, I just don't see it happening. I mean, to FFPC drafters' credit, Miles Sanders is going well ahead of Jacobs. So I think they would agree about his path. And Drake typically does go ahead of Jacobs as well. Not always. And I could see their ADPs flipping.
I could definitely see that. So so Leone put out an article on Establish the Run that was basically like, look, the math says you got to do this, right? That you got to start, you know, like hyper fragile, robust running back. in best ball tournaments, right? Not necessarily in best ball leagues, but in best ball tournaments with kind of, and kind of the math proves out what you would intuitively say as a critic of drafting modified zero running back teams, which is that, you know, guys we really like as zero running back guys, you know, Pollard, Daryl Henderson, Boston Scott, Latavius Murray, those guys are going to give you loads and loads of weeks of zero.
Yeah. Well, in defense of Leone's article, he's specifically saying not to go robust running back. Like, he's not saying take, you know, 5-6 running backs. He's saying take 3 or 4 running backs. And there's a big difference in those approaches.
Right.
Because you're basically calling your shots on running back. And if those guys don't pan out and you're calling your shots early, like those might be your first 3 or 4 picks of the draft, and then you never go back to running back. If one of those guys goes down, you're not winning the league and you're certainly not winning the entire tournament. But, you know, you're also giving yourself the upside by just taking those 3-4 running backs and then hammering the other positions. If those guys do stay healthy, then your team could be smashing, you know, to close out the season. So, I think it's not a robust running back strategy, just a strategy where you take running backs early.
Yeah. Do you play a lot of best ball? Like, do you enjoy it? I mean, obviously, like, I'm just a sicko for drafting. So, like, I maxed the best ball championship last year. And I like, you know, I love to do it, but I'm currently dealing with this thing right now where it's Underdog's VPN security is better than Draft's was. So I live in Missouri, which is a state where if I wanted to do this Underdog thing, I would have to drive over to Illinois to go reg my contest. It's like 20 minutes away. So it wouldn't be that big of a deal, but it's pretty tilting. So I think what's going to end up happening is I'm going to end up with like more football guys, players, championships teams this year, because I just need to do the drafting.
Yeah. So for me, I got more into best ball last year, with draft, because the live draft is so key for me. I hate doing slow drafts for best ball. So that was big. And obviously their app was really great. So, I haven't gotten too into the Underdogs yet, but I plan to. And I've been doing the Drafters ones.
I've been crushing the Drafters Championship for sure.
Yeah, that's been a lot of fun. Basically, just like give me a live best ball draft and I'll do it. And I like that you know, it kind of functions as like mock drafts to a certain extent, you know.
It's all about getting the reps in. Like one of the when I have drafted with other people, you know, who are really good at fantasy football, I did an episode of this show where Noah Riddell and I drafted a Football Guys Players Championship team. And when I've drafted with Leone and stuff, like, you know, one of the big things is like, you kind of have to know the room. You kind of have to know, like, the more drafts you get in, the more comfortable you get knowing like, oh, if I want to complete this stack, I can wait or I can't wait. Like just kind of knowing the room like that. And, you know, for these high stakes tournaments and, you know, even for your 12 team league, like in my home leagues this year, like my 12 team leagues, like we do a Roto World friends and family league, and I have one with my buddies from college and stuff. Like I'm still really consciously trying to focus on stacks.
Yeah, no, and I think that's sharp. Getting in those reps are key, because obviously every draft is different. You have to be able to kind of flow with the draft, and you're going to be able to do that a lot better if, you know, you just have a ton of reps under your belt.
Okay, so I had an article come out on Sports Grid yesterday, and I want to bounce some of these thoughts on you guys, because I think that there is a mistake that I think people are making right now where they're like, you know, I can just get wide receivers wherever I want. And we saw people do this in the Scott Fish Bowl, right, where they'd wait to the eighth or ninth round to draft their first wide receiver. But there are a lot of people who think like, oh, you know, I can just get wide receivers whenever, and I can load up on running backs and whatever else until that point. So I think to buy that, though, you have to buy, you know, there are guys who are going actually late, like after pick 150, who can legitimately break out and have top 24 seasons at the position. So I compiled a list of 5 guys, and I want to run through these. I know one of them you are definitely going to agree with. Okay, the first one is Miles Boykin, and the theory there is pretty simple, which is Hayden Hurst is gone, taking 39 targets and 450 snaps with him. Miles Boykin is more of a like-for-like replacement in terms of like a bigger body guy who can play in line. And also, it just really would not be that unreasonable to see a talented younger player play more snaps in year two over guys like Seth Roberts, Willie Snead, Chris Moore, I believe, is the other guy who they played significant snaps there last year. Like, these are just total nobodies, right? These are total snap filler guys, whereas there's more athletic upside by playing Boykin, you know, 80% of the snaps.
Yeah, I like that one. And he's typically very, very cheap.
I mean, he's straight up free. Like, he doesn't he's not even drafted in every main event or every Football Guys Players Championship. Like, sometime he goes undrafted straight up.
Yeah, and he's a freak athlete, so I think there's a lot of upside there if he does get the snaps.
Now, in terms of a prospect, he is the, you know, he redshirted and was a late breakout. So, like, those are, in terms of evaluating prospects, that's, like, the two biggest red flags. It's like, if you redshirted and you don't break out into your final year, that probably means you're not all that good.
Yeah, although I think he could be targeted deep,
or in
the end zone. You know, it's like some of those guys do break out in a big way. I mean, Terry McLaurin would be an example of a dude.
Exactly.
One of these outliers.
Yeah.
And so if you can get him for free, I think it makes sense.
Okay. The next guy is Jalen Hurd. So this is kind of how I think about Jalen Hurd. We know Kyle Shanahan is one of those dudes who, like, actually does like gadget players, right? Like, if Kyle Shanahan was coaching Cordarrelle Patterson, he would actually get 100 touches a year, whether that be via targets or like he's tried to do it. They use Debo in that way. They even give, you know, George Kittle carries. Like, he likes to do stuff like that. When they drafted Jalen Hurd, they were like, yeah, we want to use him at tight end, we want to use him at fullback, we want to use him. And now there's actually a path to him being the week one starting slot wide receiver because of this Debo injury and the departure of Emmanuel Sanders, obviously, you know, leaves some snaps out there, and he was injured last year. I didn't know this until working on this article, though. Did you know that Hurd is, like, actually a terrible athlete?
I did not know that, no.
Yeah, he ran a 4.6940 at, like, not a huge weight or anything at the combine.
Don't love that.
Yeah, don't love that at all.
Falls into that same Boykin category where he wasn't very productive.
Well,
fifth-year player.
Well, let's reel back. He started at running back over Alvin Kamara and John Kelly, who are both in the NFL.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. He is kind of a hybrid player.
Yeah, I mean, so in his final season at Baylor, well, also he outproduced Denzel Mims, who is a second-round NFL draft pick the year that they played together at Baylor, while also running for 300 yards and two touchdowns.
But I also have none of Mims, so.
Yeah, I'm not a big Mims guy either. But, I mean, you got to treat the data points fairly. Like, just if you think Mims is overrated, the NFL is giving us the data point that he was a second-round pick. Now, granted, he was a Jet second-round pick.
Yeah, that's like a fourth-round pick for everyone else.
So I think this is the way where Hurd pays off, is kind of in a, like, a Shenolty way, where, like, he gets 80 targets, but also he also gets 50 carries, and they're, like, good. Do you remember the year where Sean Green and LaDainian Tomlinson both played for the Jets, and Sean Yes. Green out-carried Tomlinson, like, 2-1, but they gave Tomlinson all the good carries?
Yep.
I could, like, kind of see that happening with Jalen Hurd.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, and I like Shanahan tends to just, like, be flexible in terms of his player deployment. You know, if Hurd's showing a lot, I think he would then get more work. And I agree with you about him liking to use gadget players, using wide receivers in the run game. I was actually just reading an article on The Athletic talking about the way Shanahan designs his offense and how
no one loves The Athletic more than Pat Curran.
I really do. It's so good. This article is talking about how one of the things that he does, it's, like, pretty simple, but he just has, like, typically, let's say Debo, or in this case Hurd, would motion across the formation and then get to the quarterback right as the snap's occurring. So they just time that up perfectly.
Yeah, not
so
many teams do that.
Yeah, but it's, like, a pretty easy thing to install, and it creates this threat of the wide receiver running to the boundary. And, of course, he does, in fact, hand it off to the wide receiver in those situations. So they actually have to respect it. So you could see Hurd in that role if Samuel isn't ready to start the season, which he may not be. So, yeah, I like that one too. And he's pretty cheap as well. In all honesty, Boykin's a guy that I've been drafting some. Hurd isn't so much, and I feel a little bit left out. I don't want to miss the party on Hurd. Mostly I haven't been getting him because I've been trying to get more Kittle and more Ayuk since the Samuel injury. But I think I need to start sprinkling in Hurd. Where have you been getting him?
So he goes, so in the drafters championship now, it is 12 teams instead of 10 teams, which means that it goes to what's the math? It goes to 224 players now instead of 200. And he's a guy that you can like for real take with your last pick in that. Nice. And that's where I've been taking him. I would also take him in the main event that goes to 20 rounds. So you have to take a kicker and it, well, you don't have, no, yeah, you don't have to. Oh, you do have to. Yeah. It's been, okay. So you could take him with your 18th round pick there or your 19th or whatever. And like he also, this year I'm trying to prioritize cause I'm expecting there to be like waivers are going to be crazy this year. So I want to be able to take guys that I can cut week one and I'll just know. And if the 49ers open up in week one, Jalen Hurd only plays the slot, you know, no creative snaps at all and sees three targets with an average depth of like 7 yards. Like I can just cut him and be like, it's just not going to happen for him this year.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. A very non-sexy name. This is probably the least sexy guy I've ever touted, but Hunter Renfro. I mean, he just, there is a 10 round difference between Hunter Renfro and Darren Waller. And when both of those guys were on the field for the Raiders last year, like when Renfro was fully healthy, Renfro was like more involved in the offense week over week than Darren Waller was.
Yeah. Renfro is really interesting. Ben Gretsch was tweeting about Renfro a little bit and in regards to his yards per out run, which Renfro had like a really good yards per out run last year, surprisingly. But Ben was pointing out that, you know, a lot of that's due to a couple big plays and Renfro, you know, you want to talk
about two 70 yard touchdowns.
Yeah. And he is not, I mean, literally this dude had a picture put up in front of the entire team.
With the grapes.
Yeah, of his bare chest so that the team could laugh at his physique. This is not an impressive athlete. But the thing with Renfro that I think is pretty interesting is that let me back up. The thing with efficiency, and I had a really interesting conversation with Ben about this, is that like, I think the reason efficiency matters is because the coaches are looking at this stuff and they're going, okay, who do we need to get more involved?
Yeah.
Coming up in the future, you know, down the line this season or next season. In Renfro's case, you do feel like maybe they're kind of with the, okay, it was just two big plays line of reasoning because they add Edwards, they add Ruggs. So you wonder how much.
This is the way I would distill that situation. First, they knew they couldn't play Zay Jones. They couldn't play they got to watch Tyrell Williams play over the course of the season. And they're like, okay, Tyrell, you're a very good third wide receiver. You're really miscast as a top wide receiver. Now they did sign Nelson Agholor too, which is like kind of weird. Like, why are you signing Nelson Agholor when you already have Hunter Renfro?
You could after, why are you signing Nelson Agholor?
Why are you signing Nelson Agholor? I mean, they did rotate through. They tried a bunch of guys out at wide receiver last year. They had Trevor Davis on the team. They tried Keelan Doss. Like, they tried to find answers at wide receiver, and they were left in lurch because they were planning on Renfro, Tyrell Williams, and Antonio Brown being their three guys. Renfro was injured to start the year. Antonio Brown obviously never ended up playing for the Raiders. So they, like, some of the things they thought they were going to do, they didn't end up being able to actually do. This is a pretty cool, not pretty cool, but something I found is that, I mean, we agree that 2020 is one of the best wide receiver classes of all time, right? Like,
yes,
for like absurd. Hunter Renfro scored the 8th most PPR points of any wide receiver in that class. So, you know, more than Hardman, more than Sims, more than Preston Williams, more than Jacoby Myers, more than Greg Ward, Miles Boykin. Like, he was on the field and productive more as a rookie than these other guys. And like, in terms of how like Sim scores and everything that we looked at from back in the RotoViz days, like, we know that scoring PPR points early is like a very good indicator of future production.
The other thing I like about Renfro is that it feels to me like the Raiders are trying to make Derek Carr something that he's not. You know, they draft Ruggs, they get this speed guy. And, you know, some people think that Ruggs could be more than just a deep threat. He might have more of a complete skill set as a receiver. He may. But it certainly seems like the Raiders would really prefer Carr to stop throwing to guys like Hunter Renfrow. But Carr seems to me like someone who is going to keep throwing to guys like Hunter Renfrow. And so will Marcus Mariota, by the way, if he's the starter. I mean, that's like why he was benched, is that he, you know, he throws shallow. So, I mean, one of the reasons. So, yeah, I think you've got two guys who in quarterbacks who are likely to be shallow A-dot guys, and that works for Renfrow. And then the other thing about Renfrow is that we've seen with slot receivers that sometimes they just have these really kind of gross
They rack up 80 catches while doing absolutely nothing after the catch. And yeah, coaches buy into that stuff because, you know, there's that quote that was, you know, passed after the perfect pass came out, and this was mentioned in there, it started to get popular again, which is when you throw the ball, three things can happen and only one of them is good. And coaches kind of think that way in terms of like success rate being literally a completed pass. And you're much more likely to complete a pass throwing to Hunter Renfrow than you are to Henry Ruggs.
Yeah, and I think Gruden might be a little bit old school in that, even though he's a West Coast offense guy. I mean, there was some stuff going around about how he just is kind of outdated in his play calling and everything. He is a little bit of an older generation.
Is there a more Gruden grinder player than Hunter Renfrow?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think, like, if you look at some of these wide receivers who have succeeded, that you're like, how the hell did this wide receiver succeed? A lot of them are slot wide receivers, you know, like, guys like Wes Welker come out of nowhere.
Even Antonio Brown, who was a slot wide receiver with subpar like testing athleticism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm not holding, because by the way, the reason I'm making this point is that Renfrow's college profile is really gross. Like,
yeah, not good.
So, you know, there isn't a ton of evidence beyond what he did as a rookie to be on Renfrow. And, you know, as Ben's pointing out, like, a lot of that's inflated by a couple big plays. But on the other hand, he saw a lot of snaps. I think he'll beat out Aguilar for the slot job. I don't think, like, there's going to be – I think Edwards is going to be a boundary wide receiver. So will Ruggs. So he should still be getting snaps. And if he's getting snaps, he's probably going to get targets from his crappy quarterbacks.
So, yeah, I mean, it's if Renfrow does have a wide receiver two season, it'll be very Cole Beasley last year where he just like lucks into random touchdowns. But I mean, he is a guy, like, if you are doing one of these high T running back teams and you just need like a guy to get points in the middle of the season when guys are injured and on bye weeks, like, Renfrow probably can do that.
You can't do that. If you got a high T running back team, it's ruined. I mean, talk about a low T pick, Hunter Renfrow.
Yeah, Hunter Renfrow is pretty low T, but like, it's just not going to surprise me if he sees 110 targets. Like, I will not be shocked by it.
I'm with you.
Okay, a much more high T pick, James Washington. Somehow this guy has been forgotten as everyone has decided that we're drafting Deontay Johnson in the seventh round. Like, that's a thing now. But James Washington goes in the 16th, 17th, 18th round, and he had more receiving yards than Dante Johnson last year, though Johnson had more targets. Washington led the team like by miles in air yards and average depth of target. His average depth of target was almost 16 yards. No one else on the team was over 9 yards, playing with Mason Rudolph and Devlin Hodges. And I got to say, Washington, 33% dominator rating, 18-year-old breakout age, over 20 yards per reception in college. Like, this is a guy who I'm basically giving a total pass to not having, you know, a wide receiver two season by this point. Like, I am, after writing this article and looking more into him, Washington is like one of my biggest buys right now.
Yeah, I also like this one. I mean, we're giving Juju a pass for last year, and he was not very good last year.
Giving Juju a pass.
Yeah, he was not efficient last year. Like, he just all around was not good. So, but we're giving a pass because of the quarterback play. Washington, you would have liked to see a second-year breakout from him, but I think it's fair to give him a pass on that if we're giving Juju a pass.
Well, it's not even, like, in the context of the offense, like, he didn't break out. Like, he led the team in receiving yards and average depth of target. He had that huge touchdown against the Bengals. Like, there were – if you wanted to squint and look at some signs of breaking out, like, in the context of that team, he was better than you would have expected.
Yeah, that's fair. And, yeah, I think, you know, if you're looking at him compared to Johnson, I think you prefer Johnson because he Johnson was pretty strong last year. I think he is probably in slightly better position this year for targets. He is going into his second year with Tennessee, potential for huge improvements in players. But, like, you know, I think the gap is a little absurd. You know, we're seeing such a huge gap, whereas, like, I agree with the market about which player I'd rather have, but yeah, maybe not to the extent.
I'd make them, like, 8th round, 12th round, probably. Yeah. I would expect to be the gap instead of 7th round, 16th round. I think that seems more fair.
I agree.
Well, and Washington profiles more as the style of guy who can have, like, a super good best ball season on, like, 110 targets, whereas, like, for Johnson to really earn his value, he really has to have, like, a good volume season, because he's not going to score a ton of touchdowns. He's not going to generate a lot of long plays.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Washington seems like an awesome best ball play.
Yeah. Like, and I know that's, like, kind of a tired trope, but, like, for example, Renfro, worst pick in best ball, better pick in weekly management, where some weeks you just need to get 8 PPR points. Washington, well, I actually, another thing I do like about Washington is if we get through 2 weeks and he has 4 targets and Juju and Johnson and, you know, Ebron is the red zone guy, like, if he's just Claypool, a total nothing, yeah, you can just know that and you can cut him and move on. You don't have to sit there and wait for it. The last guy, I figured we could spend some big time on this, but it's Laviska Shenault. So before I say anything, I'll let you do your Shenault thing.
Oh yeah, Laviska Shenault. I mean, if you want to talk about a guy with an exciting prospect profile, like, Laviska Shenault is, like, pretty much everything we're looking for, because he's an early declare player. Anthony D'Amico kind of refined this, where he pointed out we're really looking for guys who only spent 3 years in college. So we don't want those redshirt juniors. We want true juniors.
Yeah, the Miles Boykin. Sophomores. Yeah.
Right. So Shenault checks that box. He had an early breakout in college. He did struggle through injuries, which has been holding down his ADP in Dynasty. It's been holding it down in redraft as well. But he ends up as a second-round pick, lands in a situation where you do have DJ Chark, but you also have a new offense coordinator in Jay Gruden, where I think you could see some shorter throws this season compared to last year, and Gardner Minshew, who is can be a bit of a checkdown artist. So I think you could have Shenault, who played both the Z and slot in college, but tended to have shallow ADOTs, really fitting in well with that role. And Shenault's a dude who's like 225. I think he's 6'1". He's a guy who profiles really good on these shorter routes, and then just kind of a yak machine. And to that point, he's also been used in wildcat formations throughout college in short yardage. So given how inefficient Leonard Fournette was on shorter targets and at the goal line, I think that Shenault could be part of that Fournette replacement.
There's a chance, right? There's a chance.
Yeah, because Fournette, they tried to trade during the draft. I don't think it's a lock that Fournette finishes the season on the Jaguars. And I think Fournette could just straight up be benched at some point. They do not plan to have Fournette on this team in 2021. So, you know, I think they could be trying to figure out ways to get his role, which was pretty massive last year, distributed to others on the team. And Shenault, who
he had 100 targets last year.
Barkley,
yeah, Leonard Fournette had 100 targets, dude.
100 targets. I know. And a lot of that short stuff could be going on, like, wide receiver screens and stuff to Shenault. That'd be a much better way to do that kind of short, you know, not quite dump down, but shorter yards after catch type throws. And yeah, I think Shenault he's like PFF compared to Saquon Barkley. Like, this dude is athletic, he's big, and he's got that kind of running back type of profile, but he's also a true wide receiver. He had a breakout as a sophomore wide receiver in college, true sophomore. I mean, I don't understand why there isn't more hype on this guy. I think it's because of his injuries.
Yeah, it's because he looks slow because he was playing through a groin injury.
Right. But, man, I think he could explode if he's healthy to start the season. And, you know, the indications are that he will be. And also, he just had the same surgery as Brandon Ayuk. People don't seem concerned about Ayuk. So, I don't know. I think there's kind of a weird bias happening here.
So, these are the top 4 sim scores for Laviska Shenault in the RotoViz Sim Score app: AJ Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, Ohio State Michael Thomas, and DeAndre Hopkins. Also scattered in there are notable busts, Laquon Treadwell and Malcolm Kelly, who I had never heard of, and Cody Latimer as well. But then N'Keal Harry and Mohamed Sanu showing up towards the bottom of them as well. So like, before even accounting for the fact that like there's a chance that they give him like 20 goal line carries over the course of a season, you're already talking about a very good wide receiver prospect.
Yeah, I mean, the goal line thing, I'm kind of just like, that's a little bit of hype, but, you know, it is something that I think is a possibility.
Is a possibility.
The primary argument is that this dude profiles as an awesome wide receiver prospect, and he lands in a situation where, you have D.D. Westbrook, if Chris Conley as the, you know, the wide receiver twos there, and, you know, Chark is going to have a significant role, but I think Chenault might fit the offense a little bit better now.
I think your mic just dusted off there. If you want to go check your settings. So this is kind of the way I am thinking about Laviska Shenault. They targeted Leonard Fournette 100 times last year. They targeted D.D. Westbrook, who they I think they probably just want to move on from Westbrook at this point, or at least they don't view Westbrook as a key building block of their team anymore. They targeted him like 105 times, I believe. And then, you know, they gave Chris Conley 80 targets. And now, granted, we all have questions about COVID, right? About how this is going to impact rookies. Like, what if they're not able to get to training camp on time? You know, they're not going to be able to play in the preseason. There are going to be some rookies who get left behind as a result of this. Like, I would not argue otherwise. Obviously, that's not going to happen for every rookie. Some guys are just going to show up and be ready to go. Maybe Chenault is one of those guys. Maybe he's not. But if he is the week one starting wide receiver alongside Shark and Westbrook, or Shark and Conley, you know, if they play Chenault in the slot, and he has this theoretical, this magical unicorn upside of getting some of these wildcat carries and stuff like that, we are, to quote you, looking at one of the all-time draft values. Now your audio is not on at all.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you're drafting rookie wide receivers, I think there could be something to this idea that rookies are going to start slower. I think primarily that means you probably don't want to be spending super high draft capital on rookies. And you also want to be targeting rookies who are very likely to make the team in the first place. So I think some of these guys, like, that would be pretty interesting, like Jamichael Hasty on the 49ers, undrafted guy, he might be in a really tough position to even make the team, where in a normal year, you could see him just really impressing in training camp. But Chenault, second round pick, you know, what we're looking for here is not necessarily for him to just explode from week one. But when you're drafting these rookie wide receivers, you're really hoping that they'll come on, you know, in midseason or so and give your team a boost through the bye weeks, and then potentially fill in for guys who either busted or got hurt, and then end up being a huge boost for you in the playoffs. So that's kind of the hope when you draft one of these rookie wide receivers. And Chenault, with his ADP, really gives you nothing but upside. I mean, we took him in the 14th round of our FFPC Football Guys Players Championship, and people were kind of mocking us for that, saying, like, you could have waited until the 17th round. It's like, when you get to the 14th, I mean, the opportunity cost is basically non-existent, so just grab them. But
that's we should take a break here, by the way, and make a point, which is that, like, even I think after like round 8, the opportunity cost diminishes in terms of ADP, like what you're costing yourself so much, because all these guys, they're projecting the exact same, right? These are guys with not 100% clear playing time. This is when people start to take the pass-only quarterbacks, right? So, like, after Josh Allen goes, then it's Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz. And then after Rob Gronkowski goes, then you get into the tier of tight ends where you throw your hands up and you say, you know, I don't know the answer. And at wide receiver, for me, it's Devontae Parker. After Devontae Parker goes, it's just a wide group of guys who could break out or end up back on the waiver wire, and neither outcome would surprise me. And, like, after that group, yeah, like, in terms of what you're strategically giving up by reaching by a couple rounds on ADP, like, really, it's not, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and you see such wild swings from draft to draft in that ADP range. So
the bands really are wider.
Yeah, you can get hurt by trying to play it too cute with the ADP. I mean, it's something to keep in mind. Like, if you can get a guy in the 14th and then you know there's a very high chance you can get Bisc in the 15th, you know, okay, I get that. But he might not make it back there because there might just be a guy like me in your draft who's going to take him in the 14th. So, you know, I do think it's – you don't want to get a little bit silly in that range of the draft. Like, you should be prioritizing the guys that you feel really confident about once you get into those teens and later.
Yeah. How do you play later in these drafts with exposures? I know people can get burnt with being all in on late round guys. You know, one of the guys that we had last year in our projections was Kenny Stills, right? So we had Kenny Stills and Devontae Parker both projected really well. We had Kenny Stills a little bit ahead of Devontae Parker. And then obviously that didn't end up mattering because Kenny Stills ended up on the Texans. That was pretty brutal of not ending up being super overweight. But like, clearly you can get burnt being super overweight on guys. But, you know, on the other hand, DJ Shark in the 18th round last year in the Draft Best Ball Championship was like one of the absolute best picks that you could have made. How do you lean on exposures of later round guys? Do you tend to like hone in on a bunch of guys, or do you spread the risk pretty evenly?
I do tend to hone in on guys a little bit more because your hit rates in those ranges are so low that I think you want to be taking, you know, your best shots. You know, obviously it depends. Like, if you're going to be just having a portfolio, like a massive portfolio of best ball teams, then, you know, you got to manage that a little bit more. I think like with the high stakes draft and stuff, like you can cut all these dudes. So I just want to take my big swings. And I like to think about like what, especially this year, a lot of those swings are occurring at running back because there's just so much uncertainty with who's even going to be able to play when we get to week one, you know? And so you could see just a crazy amount of these running backs who are pretty contingent value based actually getting work, like way more than in a normal season. So I'm trying to get like Jerick McKinnon, Eno Benjamin,
Jerick McKinnon, the man,
like Benny Snell, like all these guys. I mean, in our quad managed draft, Hassan was recommending we take Carlos Hyde, and we were just getting grossed out. And, you know, in our defense, he was bringing up Carlos Hyde's name in like round 10. So we're like, why are we talking about Carlos Hyde right now? And that made me a little sick to my stomach. But as I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, shit, you know, Carlos Hyde, he dominated goal line work last year.
I mean, if Chris Carson takes his 3-week trip to the coronavirus injured reserve, which is what it sounds like they're going to do, which is everyone who tests – my guess is probably that in the end, if you test positive, you have to miss 2 games is probably what will end up happening instead of 3 games. But if that is – like, if that's what ends up happening, there are going to be multiple scenarios where a starting running back tests positive and Carlos Hyde, Reggie Bonifant, you know, whoever, like these total scrubs who go undrafted are going to be multi-week starting running backs.
Yeah, totally. And I think when you're looking at these guys, there's some exceptions. I think McKinnon might be an exception to this rule a little bit just because the 49ers backfield is kind of special. But generally, you just want to see, like, if things break for this guy, will he get a big goal line role or will he get a bunch of receptions? And, you know, I think, like, a guy like Hyde, it's really gross, but you can see the goal line role pretty clearly. Snell, you can see the goal line role pretty clearly there. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. And I just want to be loaded up with as many of these scratch-off running backs as I can this year.
I mean, this is the year, right? I mean, we say this every year, but I mean, so
but this really is.
Well, what's interesting is that 2019 was the worst year of, like, I don't know, of the last 6 years since fantasy football has became this like high stakes global phenom, like, you know, with the best ball championships and everything. Like, for as long as fantasy football has been super, super, super popular, it was the worst year for zero running back. Like, there was not one case of a starting running back getting injured and a guy coming in and being a multi-week league winner. There was 2 weeks for Latavius Murray. The Detroit Lions situation never really panned out. Ezekiel Elliott stayed healthy. Christian McCaffrey stayed healthy. Dalvin Cook stayed healthy until week 16, I believe. And then Mike Boone sucked. But like there wasn't even really a CJ Anderson to close out the year. Like it was the, and To make it worse, wide receiver scoring was insanely flat. Like Michael Thomas had the insane year, but then outside of that, you know, all of these wide receivers were between 250 and 200 PPR points.
Right. Right. And you had guys like Davante Adams who
got hurt.
Yeah. Juju, as we mentioned, was a dud. Yeah. So yeah, it was a really tough year for zero running back. Kind of all the stars aligned against it. So I think that, you know, things are shaping up for a drastically different season in 2020. And I'm just trying to look forward, you know?
Yeah. We've already seen the market overreact, right? Like we have already seen the market be like, okay, DJ Moore, you're going to go in the fourth round and Todd Gurley, you're going to go in the second round. Like it's the most reactionary I've ever seen a market be, which maybe like the fantasy football market, you know, many people think all markets are efficient, but the fantasy football market is not a efficient market in my opinion.
Who's a grosser pick to you, Todd Gurley or Leonard Fournette?
Fournette, because for like, if Todd Gurley's healthy, he will get the touches. I don't really have any, like, maybe they use Ito Smith on passing downs a little bit, but probably not. Fournette, his team just does not want to give him the ball.
Right. Yeah.
They don't want him on the roster.
Yeah, I think maybe Gurley has one season left in his knee, but I don't think the Jags have one season left for Fournette.
I mean, if Gurley does have one season left in his knee and Atlanta throws 650 passes, Gurley is going to be required to win these tournaments because he will catch 80 passes and score 14 touchdowns. He really will.
Yeah. All right. Shit. I guess we're drafting Todd Gurley.
I mean, but with him, it's not like, I actually don't think there's a real range of outcomes with him where like maybe he plays and he's bad because he was bad last year and he was good. You know what I mean? Like he did not play well, but his numbers were what you would have expected from where you drafted him. Like I don't really have performance efficiency concerns from him.
His receptions were down low last year.
If he plays 16 games, it will be higher than that in Atlanta. I would be willing to bet on that.
Yeah. That would be a huge boost for him if he's back getting more receptions and also more effective, because he used to be awesome in the receiving game. He was not very good last year in the receiving game, and I think that's probably where you see the knee, you know, costing him. Like if he doesn't have that explosion, I mean, that's why he was so good in the receiving game previously, is he was so good in space. So,
but yeah, I mean, he's not good in space anymore. So now he's going to be catch and fall down because his knee can't make those like lateral cuts anymore. He used to be able to do it. He can't anymore. But like, and the other guy, this is so terrible, but the other guy I could see just having this like gross 14, 15 touchdown season is if this experiment in Denver works, where Drew Lock plays up to what the organization is saying they think he is, where like Judy and Hamler come in and they're running around and creating space and Sutton is dominating on the edges and Noah Fant is using all of his athleticism, like, and the offensive line is pretty good and they just, you know, they're scoring all these points and running all these plays, like Melvin Gordon's going to get all the good touches, right? He's going to be in there on third downs. He's going to be in there at the goal line. And Melvin Gordon has never been good. Like, even when Melvin Gordon was good for fantasy, like, we could say Todd Gurley probably was an above-average NFL running back. I actually don't think Melvin Gordon ever was. So Melvin Gordon being bad now, to me, is not really a hurdle for him performing well for fantasy.
Yeah, I like that call. I mean, one of the things that's you know, that I'm not on board with among a lot of the guys who we really like. Basically, all the kind of Rotoviz types of dudes tend to be on Philip Lindsay, and I'm not.
I'm on Philip Lindsay.
Yeah, and it's for the reasons that you mentioned. I think Gordon's going to get all the juicy stuff. So he's going to get all the goal line work, I think. He's going to get – I mean, last year, Royce Freeman –
I mean, Freeman got the juicy stuff last year anyway, but Lindsay was still better than him because he's a better player. And I know we don't like to get into those distinctions with running backs all that often, but like Philip Lindsay, like I feel confident saying this, above average NFL running back.
I do too. But I think if you're getting out touched by Royce Freeman at the goal line and getting fewer receptions than Royce Freeman, it's going to be a problem when Melvin Gordon joins the team. So I'm just not really on Lindsay at all, but I do think that there's some really high upside outcomes for Gordon because he's getting all that juicy stuff. And if the pie ends up bigger than we expect And it would happen, like you say, through Drew Lock taking a big step forward with these weapons that they've added. Then I think you could see Gordon really racking up touchdowns and also like racking up receptions if they tend to play a little bit faster, more pass heavy than expected.
Well, for me with Denver, it's like you can't talk outside of both sides of your mouth. We're like, you know, my projections really like Tom Brady, despite me thinking that Tom Brady has seen his best days. And it's because he's playing with Rob Gronkowski, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, OJ Howard as the second tight end, you know, good running backs with Rojo. Like, we think that the offensive environment is really good. And I think the offensive environment in Denver seems like it should be really good. And Drew Lock would have to be like Osweilerian for it to not work.
I like that. Osweilerian. Yeah. Yeah.
Are there any of these other gross guys? Like, they're like, so Jacobs for me, I can't draft. And also I love Nick Chubb, the player, but like Nick Chubb, I can't draft either. Like, these are some of the guys. I really wanted to be in on Jonathan Taylor, in drafts before the draft, like in best balls, I was taking a lot of Jonathan Taylor. I'm pretty much done with that now, just because what's the point, right? Like, he's going to lose out on all the good work too.
I could see it. Jonathan Taylor, I can definitely see in managed leagues, and especially in leagues like Football Guys Players Championship, where you have a huge playoff tournament. And I think Taylor's not only going to be better than Marlon Mack as a rusher, I think he could be a lot better than Nyheim Hines in the receiving game. And it might take him 13 weeks to lock up, you know, a workhorse role, but I think it could happen. And if you're starting him week 14 and he's the Colts workhorse behind a really good offensive line, then you could just be smashing with him. So I actually, while I'm not getting that much of him, I do not think it's necessarily a bad pick in that type of format. A guy that, this is actually another gross guy, but I just want to make a point on David Johnson, who I think is a pretty gross pick because
he'd catch so many passes.
He could catch a lot of passes, but Carlos Hyde last year in like a clear two down role there, as the lead back, he just had 16 carries inside the 10-yard line, and there were only three other carries to running backs inside the 10-yard line. I think
because they throw or they use Deshaun.
Yeah, they play out of the shotgun on the goal line. It's weird. And they use Deshaun a lot. He had 8 carries inside the 10. So just a reminder that, like, Houston's goal line role is going to suck. So
I would say, though, I could see that changing this year in terms of how they plan on working inside the red zone because they don't have DeAndre Hopkins. I actually think that could change the way they call plays down there because they would rather play two tight ends, Cooks, Fuller, as opposed to – because you throw the ball to DeAndre Hopkins one-on-one, he's going to win that battle more often. You don't really think of Will – like, I mean, we don't really think of them that way. I'm sure that Bill O'Brien does not think of Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks that way.
Yeah, that would make a huge difference. Their play calling has been a big impediment to that role. But the other guy, I actually would say that I kind of get it with Chubb because he does have a ton of contingent value. Normally,
he's a fucking stud. Nick Chubb's just so good.
When we tend to talk about contingent value with the later round running backs, but like if Hunt were to get hurt or to do something off the field, then Chubb would be an absolute monster workhorse and could basically
or if Stefanski just goes all in on this like ground heavy scheme that it seems like he wants, like if they just are all in on becoming like this mega ball control offense, like he could average he could get like 300 carries.
Yeah, that's true as well. I mean, that's something you want to see, the contingent path not being the only path. You want to see these guys be able to dominate without someone getting hurt. And I agree. I mean, Chubb has, I think it's maybe a little bit of a narrow path without a Hunt injury, but it's there. The other thing is that Chubb is just going to dominate the goal line work. So
he'll get literally all of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's another path where maybe there is a split, but this offense is a little bit more potent and he just, you know,
scores. What if Nick Chubb just goes full Derrick Henry, averages less than a catch per game, but scores 20 touchdowns?
Yeah. Yeah. He just gets like 11 rush touchdowns and is more involved in the passing game than we think. Like,
I have Nick Chubb in not very many dynasty leagues, but I have him in a couple. And one of them is he's on a very good team where I traded multiple firsts this year for Tyreek Hill. And like, I'm kind of all in on winning this year. And I was thinking about trading him for some future value, but like I can't bring myself to do it because I see that Derrick Henry season.
Well, the other thing with Chubb, and this actually makes me more bullish on both Chubb and Hunt in Dynasty, is that
Hunt, it's only a year.
So if he departs, I mean, Hunt could end up behind a much worse running back than Chubb. I mean, that's almost like that'd be hard not to do. So he's probably someone who's going to have more value next year. And then if Hunt gets replaced by a less talented guy, which again is also very likely, then Chubb all of a sudden his value is where it's been this whole time, because I think he's been overvalued in Dynasty. But
right,
you can actually start to see, okay, man, this guy really could be like a three down workhorse in 2021. That's pretty exciting.
And then he's done because running backs last for like 4 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. You know, just sort of one of those. And I just had something and then I lost it.
Worry with Chubb specifically because he had that devastating knee injury. I mean, you could see him being a Todd Gurley guy where it just goes.
Yeah, you could see that happening. While we're here, what do you think? Have you drafted Austin Hooper at all?
Not really. No, I think I've taken him in like a drafters where I took like, I think I did like a Hurst and Hooper or something.
Oh, so you just the role reversal guys were like here's the thing. I don't think that Austin Hooper is like a special guy or anything like that. So I think last season was like not really like, it's just kind of like, I think Hayden Hurst could do what he did last year if the Falcons choose to use him that way. I've not drafted much Hayden Hurst though.
Me either. Yeah. I'm not really on either guy, but, and actually, someone in our main event did the same thing. They took Hurst and Hooper. So kind of an interesting pairing. But, yeah, I'm not really on Hooper that much. I tend to agree that I think this offense could be fairly run-heavy, meaning the Browns. And I think that Landry and Beckham will be, you know, getting the vast majority of the targets.
Okay, I just remembered the point I thought, which was – could we see the trade deadline this year be nuts because of – COVID stuff, because of injuries? Like, what if you have, you know, multiple guys out with COVID? Like, could we see a more active trade deadline? This is like we're really going down like the looking glass here, but like I did just kind of have that thought.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, if anything's going to get the NFL to have an interesting trade deadline, I feel like maybe that would be it. The other thing you could see is that a guy fails his physical because of COVID.
Oh, I mean, gets traded and then shows up. Yeah.
With COVID, I mean, that's I would imagine would be a reason to fail the physical and have the trade be annulled.
So it's the range of outcomes for this season just feels so crazy to me. Like it could end up being fine where like kind of like with baseball where, yeah, I mean, yeah, we had the Juan Soto thing, but by and large, it seems like the infection rate with baseball players has been really low. Or we could be seeing Bo Levi Mitchell in week 4 starting for the Minnesota Vikings. Like this is a point I have not seen anyone from the NFLPA or from the NFL address. Is like, what happens if a team's 3 quarterbacks all test positive for COVID in the same week? Like, do you forfeit? Do you sign a guy off the street? Like, what do you do? What is the contingency?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I also have been thinking about the playoffs. You know, we're so focused on the regular season for fantasy, but like what happens if you get to the Super Bowl and the like and Mahomes the, or someone
oh yeah Mahomes has COVID, so this is Matt Moore's game.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, talk about like, you could have like a real asterisk type of season, like type of Super Bowl win if you get to play the Chiefs without Mahomes, you know, due to COVID.
I mean, Philip Rivers brought that up, right? That's actually the one guy I've heard say that is on an NFLPA call. Philip Rivers said, you know, what happens if I test positive for COVID before the Super Bowl? He actually did bring that up.
Okay. All right. Well,
I mean, try telling an NFL quarterback, try telling Mahomes, try telling Lamar, try telling Tom Brady, you made it to the Super Bowl, but you can't play. You feel fine, right? You feel fine. Everything's cool, but you can't play because you tested positive.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's so many crazy things that this adds to the mix, and in a sport that's already super volatile, already has way more injuries than other sports, has a crazy small sample size. So we're not even sure entirely like what's going on as it is. So yeah, it's just going to be nuts this season.
I was going through a period of being like kind of depressed about fantasy football, of being like, man, I don't even know. Like, I have all these teams, but like, what's really the point? But I've kind of been, first of all, I was reinvigorated by them agreeing to testing protocols because, well, Laird was telling Peter and I, like, man, I don't know. I'm not feeling good about this, which was kind of me being like, well, what do I care then? But like, they're going to play the season. And the way that I draft, which is to focus on getting players that have more ability to withstand fragile situations, like it's just going to be better for teams that are used to living in those circumstances.
Right. Yeah. And you know, Pete and I have talked about this, but I think like a pushback that you'll get on the whole zero running back being good this year argument is that like not only running backs are going to get COVID, so you're going to have those wide receivers that you're taking in round two and round three, like those guys could also be out for multiple weeks. But I think the thing is that when wide receivers go out, there isn't necessarily a guy who steps up into a huge role behind him.
Well, and
running backs, it does tend to be more predictable that way.
There's more edge for fantasy football players who have familiarity with like prospect profiles and evaluating efficiency and stuff. Like if you're just a news and information grinder style player, and you're like, you know, Jason Avant is the same thing to me as Jeremy Maclin when Terrell Owens goes out. Like, right. Like there's going to be an edge in evaluating wide receiver and tight end types on the waiver wire as well.
That's very true. Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting. What do you have a home league that you like super care about or anything? Or do you just grind the big stuff?
I have a couple kind of friends, family leagues where one's like a dynasty league but this year I actually kind of timed this perfectly. I just decided that I was going to do like a full rebuild on this thing. And so that feels pretty good to not have to sweat this season too hard in that league. And then there's an auction league that I've been in for years and years and years. That's just kind of like a, you know, just friends and stuff, but that will be really interesting. I mean, auction is like a whole nother
thing. Yeah, next week we should talk about auction strategy.
Yeah, because I think there's really something to the idea of like, don't spend a ton of money on anyone, right?
No, I mean, spend $20 on 10 dudes.
Yeah, which normally is gonna leave you without
is terrible
upside. Yeah, but this year it might be a winning strategy.
Okay, so my question there is, have you guys implemented any rules or do you have any thoughts on rules to dampen the impact of COVID on the sport? What my league did, my longtime league that I care about, and I talked about this on a show Wednesday with Friedman, is we added 3 IR slots, and previously we had no IR slots at all. And basically just assuming that guys who get COVID are going to be on IR and not count against the active roster. So that will keep you from having to cut bench guys you like if Ezekiel Elliott gets COVID.
Yeah, we haven't done anything like that yet, but I like that idea a lot. The commissioner in this league is very particular about things, so I don't know if that'll be able to get through. But I think ideas like that are really smart. I mean, fantasy is supposed to be fun. It's not fun to have to cut one of your studs because he came down with
a kicker for in week 10 because someone got COVID.
Yeah, that sucks. So I think that's a really smart idea.
Yeah. All right, Pat, what do we have on ETR this week?
On ETR, I am actually just getting through my last article on running back targets. So that should be up hopefully later today. And that is going to be covering running back flyers. So, you know, a lot of the guys that I was talking about as scratch offs, I'll have write-ups on those guys. And that completes my running back target list over there, which I've had 3 other parts already come out. So that's up. And then, yeah, we've got more ship chasing minis rolling out. And then next Wednesday on ship chasing, we should have a special guest to review our main event team in total.
There we go. All right, everyone, follow Pat on Twitter. We'll be back with the show next week, everyone. Take it easy. Stay safe out there.